to your work with clients.
Yeah, thank you very much, Will.
So tell us, how did you make this process from being someone who was a mental patient in the system and in hospitals and with that diagnosis and going through those experiences, how did you make it to where you are today to now preparing to graduate with a master's degree and moving towards your license as a therapist?
You know, everybody has the capacity for what may be called altered state experiences as a child. You know, I don't think that it was pathologized or looked at as weird or anything like that.
Like imagination kinds of experiences?
Yeah, imagination. You know, I think kids do it all the time. And part of it is play and part of it is imagination. But I think part of it is also, you know, being in touch with what's called the imaginal realm and the realm of using fantasy to help create what our reality is. And kids do it all the time. I entered the psychiatric system, you know, when I was 19, and I actually didn't have altered state experiences. I was experiencing clinical depression. I feel like it was for reasons that most folks can relate to or understand. You know, I was at a high stress school. I was at Yale. You know, I was really stressed out by finals coming up. I mean, I was taking freshman organic chemistry. It was really hard.
Freshman organic chemistry is definitely depressing.
I have like a family that really values education. And so I got really anxiously depressed. And I also, there was a breakup involved. It was my first heartbreak. I was going through some identity crisis, like, what am I doing with my life as a 19-year-old? You know, like, do I devote myself to being a neurobiologist or do I devote myself to doing social justice work? It was a lot of pressure. I sought services at Student Mental Health Services at Yale. And, you know, I was met with a therapist who is just really concerned more about, I think, of me as a liability issue than me as a person who is a struggling Yale student. You know, through a long, actually, it wasn't even a long turn of events. It was kind of just like one session of sitting with her and telling her kind of how I was feeling and expressing suicidality. I got involuntarily hospitalized at Yale. And so, you know, it was really scary, you know, because Yale was my dream. I had applied there early decision. So, like, you know, I went and I got involuntarily hospitalized because I had strong expressions of suicidality in the room, which were actually more kind of just like, I don't know what to do right now. Can you give me some services and help?
Do you feel that the involuntary hospitalization was necessary to save your life?
No, not at all.
Were you given any options? Did they say, well, do you want to go to the hospital or what?
No. Yeah. So, and, you know, from that hospital experience, you know, I ended up being kicked out of school, actually. And so, you know, that put me in a really difficult situation. And, you know, I ended up, you know, finding a psychiatrist and a psychologist. And, you know, it started my relationship with the mental health system. It started my relationship with psych drugs. And, you know, it was very hard being kicked out of Yale for me. It totally was unexpected. You know, I came back to Yale and everything. You know, there's a difficult readmission process. But like, I came back and it's just, you know, it was just like not a very supportive environment. You know, I loved a lot of my classes. I did well in a lot of my classes. But I noticed that, you know, I was still on a lot of psych drugs, and I kept getting added psych drugs as I saw, like, Student Mental Health Services at Yale. If I had, like, a little bit of depression or anxiety, it's like, here, I have some more psych drugs. And I didn't know how to, honestly, I didn't know how to say no to a psychiatrist who was saying like, no, you have to like up your meds. I'm a psychiatrist, you know, like I know what I'm doing kind of thing. Not that they presented it that way, but, you know, I was just listening, following doctor's orders, even though doctor's orders made me lethargic, made me unable to read, you know, sometimes with like the meds I was on, my like ability to read decreased so much, being put on psych drugs, and it was really hard for me. So I had to put in a lot more effort for my studies. And then, so, you know, what happened in 2004 was my first altered state experience, which was really, really intense. It involved a lot of like mythic imagery. I felt like I was kind of in a dream state the whole time.
What was it that led up to that? How is it that you went into this altered state experience?
Yeah, well, what happened is along the course of my treatment, I had been put on lithium. And I really didn't like lithium, but I just kind of resigned myself to being on the drug because I was told that I had a chronic illness and I had to be on this drug for the rest of my life. So basically in 2004, I decided to just come off of it cold turkey, and I, because my psychiatrist wouldn't really support, you know, that. And so I just, you know, I was just like, screw it, you know, I'm just going to come off lithium. You know, I really think that the coming off the lithium without any supervision led to that altered state experience.
So you were not getting any support. You didn't want to be on the drug. You weren't given any options for slowly reducing or any kind of cooperation from your doctor, it sounds like. And so you just said, okay, I'm going to do this myself. And then it threw you into this altered visionary state. Is that what happened?
Yeah, that was my first experience with psychosis. I didn't have psychosis before I was put on psych drugs.
Were you like staying up all night and having these visions and talking a lot, or what is it that you were doing?
Yeah, I mean, I was definitely staying up all night. I mean, I was creating a lot of art. You know, I was talking to everybody. I wanted connection with everybody. And some people were very receptive. And actually, some people were very glad for the connection because I would connect to people who are living on the street. I would connect to, you know, people. And like, it was just like emotional experiences with people that I didn't know, and we would just go into deep emotional states together. You know, I ended up coming to my psychiatrist, and I was clearly racing. You know, and he picked up some paranoia too. I was having some just a few paranoid thoughts. I remember saying to him, like, hey, like, I'm not sleeping. I'm creating all this art. I'm trying to stay on top of my studies. And isn't it weird that the number 55555555 called me? And, you know, I was saying this probably in a really fast-paced way, and I ended up also getting involuntarily hospitalized at that time, which I don't think was with standard grounds of hospitalization. I just didn't feel like he would get it, honestly.
So you weren't a danger to yourself, you weren't suicidal or threatening other people or anything like that, but you still ended up getting just put in the hospital.
I got kicked out again, and I had to go through readmission again, but it was very disruptive being kicked out of Yale. You know, I wasn't with my original class. Housing became an issue, like who was I going to live with? I graduated, but, you know, I graduated with a little bit of a, I don't know what to call it, like a little bit of a lot of resentment, actually, and a lot of damage.
And you had this big altered state experience, and then you did end up graduating from Yale. How did you sort of make sense of it? Did you start to put it into a spiritual framework? And then what was it that led you to want to be a therapist with that experience?
Well, I mean, I continued to have altered state experiences every time I tried to withdraw off my medication. I think what happened is that, you know, I was put on Abilify as well. And, you know, I tried to withdraw carefully, actually, several times with clinical supervision. But it felt like, you know, every time I got to a certain level, I would go into a cycle of sleep deprivation and going into a psychotic state. Just trying to kind of piece together what was happening in these dreamlike states.
Someone might say, well, look, you know, your brain was just going haywire because of the chemicals. There's no meaning to it. All this content was just random chemical discharge from an intoxicated brain that's affected either by, you know, lithium withdrawal or Abilify, or affected by this psychotic illness. So what would you say to that? Do you think that these experiences had meaning, and were there themes and patterns and messages and purposes that you see for you having those states?
So I feel like in a weird way, I was thrown into these psychotic visionary states so that I could help heal myself and help heal my family and my karma, honestly, to make it, put it into a more like spiritual transpersonal lens.
So what were those patterns or meanings or messages that you discovered that were healing for you?
I was in the kitchen once with my boyfriend, and he was washing the dishes. And I started, you know, with the altered states, it's really interesting because the connections start getting very loose. It starts getting very metaphorical, and things start to take on meaning of kind of deeper or maybe also confused meaning. It took on the significance of cleaning up something and forgetting kind of what happened, like sweeping something under the rug. And it took on the significance of what happened with the Bangladeshi genocide. And, you know, at the time, there were people who were on trial for the Bangladeshi genocide. It was in the news. It's part of my heritage. And it really, somehow I just leaped from this putting away the dishes into this like, wow, my heritage is Bangladeshi. My parents are genocide survivors, and the Bangladeshi genocide is being framed as a forgotten genocide by historians. It's just something that's not really talked about too much because it's super traumatic. And it was a very hard time for my parents.
Was this a war and a genocide that affected them directly?
Yes. So my dad, his family at one point was taken out of their house and lined up like as if to be shot by a firing squad. But their lives were spared and they were homeless for quite a while. And, you know, my mom, she had her very close great-grandfather was a doctor, and he was escorted away and shot and killed in the Bek. The genocide in Bangladesh was very intense. The reports say at least 1 million, to some say 3 million, were murdered. The people who were targeted were university students, professors, healers, thinkers, intellectuals. There was mass murders and mass rapes. So something about these dishes that my boyfriend was doing, it just flipped me somehow to that space. And I was in that space while he was doing the dishes. And
even though this was talked about a little bit, it wasn't really something that was addressed and healed in your family. And so you're carrying all that with you in that moment when you're in this altered state.
Yes, it's a lot of trauma that's unprocessed and carried. Yeah, it's a lot. And a lot of the content of my altered states started carrying content around the Bangladeshi genocide, how it affected my parents, how it affected my ancestors. And it very dark, difficult material that would come into my psyche at times, and I would have to learn how to use mindfulness to not get overcome by these states and get confused at what is happening in my mundane reality to these really difficult historical traumas that kept showing up.
So what happened with the dishes in that moment?
The environment actually started getting very violent towards me, which is not that the environment changed. It was actually the same. It was just this the kitchen. But it started feeling violent. And I started noticing the knives. There's like this ominousness came upon the environment, and it felt like the environment was out to attack me. You know, I would use mindfulness. I would check in with my body. I would breathe to just bring me back to a state of the present and the here and now, so I wouldn't get lost into these places where I felt like the entire environment was going to kill me.
So this was really a kind of like a teaching that came out of those altered states. It really pushed you through an extreme kind of terror, really,
yeah,
to developing your own capacity to use meditation and mindfulness.
Yeah, so, you know, I started exploring this violent energy that would pop up in my environment related to Bangladeshi genocide or related to trauma. And so that, you know, I had personal trauma I'd experienced. I started sitting with my therapist. And what's interesting about altered states experiences for me is that once I've had them, I can access them kind of on cue. And so like my therapist and I started exploring, this is not like the most pleasant state to explore, but we started exploring that state where I felt like the environment is going to kill me. And so I would bring in that environment is going to kill me state kind of reluctantly, but also with curiosity, because I wanted to kind of get to the bottom of it. It's like, why would this state keep coming back to me? And we found out that actually it's associated with a lot of kind of repressed rage. And tapping into this rage, it felt like a rage that was just even beyond myself. It was beyond just like, you know, my like NOS as an angry person or whatever. It became like this like intense rage that I could feel in my body that felt like beyond me, and it felt like actually connected to my historical past. And it felt connected also, I felt like my father was also carrying that kind of rage. But none of us, you know, are able to express it. We just try to get by every day, being kind people, but it's like all this rage is contained within my body and my history and my psyche, because, you know, like 3 million of my family, you know, Bangladeshi family were murdered. And then after I started exploring the amount of rage that I was carrying, things started shifting in a really magical way within my family unit. My dad and I started having these conversations. He just suddenly became really a lot softer, a lot more open-minded than I had experienced him ever before. And it kind of blew my mind. I was like, what is happening here? This is really kind of weird and mystical. But it feels like the fact that I'm doing this inner work, processing this deep rage that is within my family system, something is being opened and something is being released. And this is allowing me to connect with my father and also with my mother. It started happening with my mother too, on a different level of consciousness, on a different plane, which then led to actually us being able to connect on kind of a regular level, much more easier.
That's a beautiful story, Nas. It really is. How do you see that as being something that you can translate from your own process to helping other people? How does that actually get into practice as a counselor, and how do we get that into helping other people in their process?
So I think that, you know, allowing people to get in touch with their spirituality, their cultural heritage, and exploring the content of what happens in these states, it can lead to a lot of healing, not only for the person, but for the family and for the collective. I have learned actually to have a wider capacity for compassion for human beings, a wider capacity of compassion for myself and understanding myself, understanding my family, even understanding war, I think. You know, I go and talk to people on the street a lot still, and I'm not in an altered state. But what I hear when I talk to people who are living on the street is often many of them say, well, I'm diagnosed with bipolar and, you know, I'm a war vet. You know, they'll start talking about trauma. And even if they're not in a clear state, and if they're rambling and you kind of in a fast-paced, what seems like a manic space or a psychotic space, is that if you sit and listen and tune in and provide a empathetic, warm presence, that people slow down and they don't ramble about things in metaphor and the CIA, but instead they start talking about, you know, I was in this car accident and I lost my daughter, or hey, I was sexually molested, or hey, I was raped. And there really needs to be a community effort to acknowledge that people who go through psychotic processes are actually holding a lot of unspoken trauma, whether it be their own personal trauma or collective trauma. That's what's happening, in my opinion.
Do you think that there's a danger of taking a lot of the spiritual perspective on madness or on psychosis and altered states and then kind of putting it in the hands of experts?
Yes, there. I feel like there is a danger between distinguishing between people who are going through what's called a spiritual emergency or spiritual emergence process and a psychotic process, because I feel like everybody is actually going through a spiritual emergence process. It's just that some people have more sensitivities and they have more trauma to process, honestly.
Yeah, and some people have more resources or they have the class background or the privilege that allows them to get a spiritual emergence counselor, where the other people are relying on the public mental health system. I think that those class differences, often race differences, are really key to how the different experiences are being perceived.
Yeah, that's a big interest of mine, is to bring these transpersonal perspectives to the community mental health system, because I don't think that people who are in the community mental health system have access to transpersonal therapists generally, because transpersonal therapists generally charge a lot of money, expect people to have a certain educational background. Spirituality does not have to be, it's not an elite thing. It's really not an elite thing. Spirituality is something that everybody has access to. The concepts are actually not that difficult. You know, you don't need like a graduate level education to understand transpersonal concepts like synchronicity. And I think introducing these ideas to people who are in the community mental health system could be very powerful, because I feel like a lot of people would resonate with them. It's just that, you know, the access to this knowledge is there in books, but it's not there in clinical practice, because it's like the therapists in community mental health settings often are not trained in this way. Transpersonal education is sequestered in the ivory tower.
Nash, you mentioned that your altered states experiences are really driven by psychiatric medication, and now that you're not taking psychiatric medication, you don't go into them involuntarily just from the withdrawal, but you do go into them voluntarily. Tell us about your relationship to those altered states today and how that works for you.
You know, living in what's called synchronicity is a pretty cool way to live life. Synchronicity is when an internal experience, a thought or a feeling or like a dream manifests in the outer world. And there's always a relationship between my internal world and my external world. It's quite magical.
Nas, we are just about out of time. Can you give us contact information if people want to get in touch with you or find out more about your student group at the California Institute of Integral Studies?
Spiritual Emergence and Other Extraordinary Experiences has a website and a Facebook. The website is spiritualemergencecis.weebly.com, and our Facebook is spiritualemergencecis.
Nas Siddiqui, thank you so much for joining us today on Madness Radio.
Thank you, Will. Thanks for having me. This has been a real honor.
You've been listening to an interview with Nas Siddiqui. She's a graduate student at the California Institute of Integral Studies, a therapist trainee at the Liberation Institute in San Francisco, and the founder of the student group Spiritual Emergency and Other Extraordinary Experiences. That's all the time we have on Madness Radio. Thanks for tuning in. You've been listening to Madness Radio, Voices and Visions from Outside Mental Health. Madness Radio is sponsored by the Icarus Project and Portland Hearing Voices. Host is Will Hall and producer is Nina Packabush. Madness Radio can be heard on KBOO FM and the Pacifica Network, and shows are archived online at madnessradio.net.
Good morning. It is still a few minutes, like 4 minutes, before the top of the hour, noontime. But please stay tuned for KBOO's live coverage of the Waterfront Blues Festival. To get us started, here's an old recording of Stuck Inside of Mobile with the Memphis Blues again, Bob Dylan, live in concert.
Cigarette. Ooh, mama, can this really be the end? rocks. Everyone still talks about how badly they were shot. But the unexpected is a happen when I seen him lose control. He built a fire on Main Street and shot it full of holes.
This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Grendel's, a neighborhood coffee house offering local roasted coffee, sandwiches for breakfast and lunch, and Wi-Fi. Proud to support KABU, Grendel's is open every day at East Burnside and 8th. More information at 503-595-9550 or facebook.com/Grendel's Coffee House. And now we bring you the continued coverage of the Waterfront Blues Festival.
You are listening to the 30th Annual Waterfront Blues Festival on the stations of Oregon Community Media, KBOO Portland, KOCFLP Vanita, KPOV Bend, KSKQ Ashland and Medford, KSOW LP Cottage Grove, KWSO Warm Springs, KYAQ Salitz. More information about OCM can be found at OregonCommunityMedia.org. You are.
This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and the grant from Grendel's, a neighborhood coffee house offering locally roasted coffee, sandwiches for breakfast and lunch, and Wi-Fi. Proud to support KBOO, Grendel's is open every day at East Burnside and 8th. Information at 503-595-955.